Good morning, evening, afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is another episode of WrestleMania, your father's favorite podcast, and your mom hates it because you listen to it and it's influencing you in negative ways. Is that good?
Good morning, WWE Universe.
My name is Brent Terhune. Someone called me the Punisher. Across from me via Skype. In apartments unknown, that is the smoker of bowls. That's Brad Scott.
Kind of took my thunder there.
You could say
live from already mentioned apartments unknown.
I'm in condos unknown in Omaha, Nebraska, where I can look out my window and just see just construction for miles. No corn, just construction.
No corn? Oh, okay. As I say, it almost would be like being in Nebraska's kind of like West Indiana.
Yeah. It's like really west, about 500 miles.
Yeah, except we have a real city.
And today we're going to be discussing this independent wrestling documentary. It's called The Bottom Rope, and Brad turned me on to this one. So we watched it. It's available. Just Google it. It's on Vimeo for free.
Yes, you can just pull it up on Google. If you have a PS4 or something, you can even use the browser. It's what I did. And just go and click on it, and it's about 25 minutes long, very short.
So you can watch it on lunch break or something like that.
Yep, I watched it probably the first time like 3 or 4 years ago, and there's one thing about it that really stood out to me, so I always remembered it. And then when we were watching the Jake the Snake documentary from a previous episode, which, God, feels like an eternity since we recorded that one.
It must have been 10 minutes ago, at least.
So I remember this one, and I happened to come across it again, and it's just fascinating.
It's definitely delves into something that, you know, we both are around a little bit as the indie wrestling scene, just going to shows. That's, you know, how we're involved, you know, not backstage or anything like that, but you see the ins and outs of how that kind of works.
And it honestly, it's one of those documentaries that I think shows the greatest parallel between comedy and wrestling, which we've talked about a lot on this show. Because when you see some of the venues they're playing, it's akin to some of the bars that we, you know, play as stand-up comedians starting out.
It's I think I've done a show where they're like the next week they were going to have wrestling at the venue.
At the same bar.
Yeah.
Or Eagles Lodge.
Well, I take that back. I've done a show in a wrestling ring, and then right after my show was the wrestling.
How did the fans respond to you?
I don't know. It was not conducive to wrestling because you were performing in the round because they were on all four sides in a bar with TVs and a Dale Earnhardt Jr. pinball machine over in the corner. So I'm as good as you could hope for, which is not great.
Oh, man. It's like the same thing as performing in a strip club.
You can't beat tits, so.
No, exactly, yeah. You have to bring the tits on stage and dance to your jokes. That's what I did.
You did?
Yeah, it's exactly what I did. Goddamn right. I paid them bitches $10 each.
Dance to my jokes.
Yep, had the DJ turn up a little small bass sound in the background, and I did it for like 10 minutes. Killed 10 minutes of my set right there. People were dying laughing. And as soon as the bitches left, they hated me for 20. But no, this movie, it's called The Bottom Rope for a reason. It is literally the bottom rope of the wrestling business.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a gentleman who I believe we've seen before, maybe in Beyond the Mat or something, the promoter guy.
The promoter was in the other documentary we recapped called Card Subject to Change.
Yes, that's it, yes.
And he was one of the main players. He's also a main player in this, but Card Subject to Change is a much longer documentary. And his name is Johnny Falco. He's the booker and promoter. And he's mostly talking about how, you know, crowds aren't what they used to be. And he even has this quote that I wrote down. I could have a show with Hulk Hogan, and I don't think I could fill the gym up anymore.
Was it Dapper John, Johnny?
Dapper Johnny Falco.
Yeah.
His real name is Joe, but that's what they said.
Which is weird. That's as far as he let us get.
Yeah, we don't want to pull the curtain back any farther.
And we, yeah, we see, we meet some other interesting characters. Crowbar, who I found fascinating.
Was that the guy? That was the guy who was the physical therapist, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who basically, like, and I'll be honest, I could easily get to this point in my life. He is a physical therapist, makes good money doing that, and he does wrestling, like he said, basically as like a hobby.
Yeah, and he actually wrestled on Monday Night Nitro, and then like 2 weeks before Nitro or WCW was bought, he was let go. So he actually had a, you know, was a legitimate wrestler for a little bit. And now, you know, after being fired, I think it kind of, he kind of fell back into what Jake the Snake had, was addictions and stuff like that. And then he gained weight, and now he's kind of back getting into wrestling as, you know, taking it seriously. And the one thing that I noticed in this documentary, the people they followed around, all of them actually had, like, good bodies for wrestling. Because, yeah, you know, we've been to independent shows, and you're like, why is that guy's pants pulled up so high? It's because he's hiding his gut.
Or, yeah, or it's the, I look stronger than that guy.
Yeah.
Or, is that kid 14?
Yeah. Crowbar is featured in the movie, and he chose to finish wrestling school when his other partner, Danny Inferno, went to Louisville and went to wrestling school, and I don't think either one of them are made it farther than the other. So
no, yeah, and Crowbar has, you know, he's successful, and he gets to do this as a hobby, and he compares it to a men's softball league.
Yeah, he's like, if I can make $100 on a Friday night, you know,
doing his hobby, exactly. And like, you can see he has his kids and everything, and he comes down and he's like, does daddy look scary or silly? You know, you can tell he's a family man who gets to kind of go live out his passion. That's why I said I can easily see myself getting to that point. It's not, you know, if I can't become a nationally touring headliner that's making enough money to support myself that way, if I inevitably had to take a day job again, I would still do stand-up as much as I could, weekends here or there, just because it's one of those things. If it's in your blood to do it, and you're not just doing it for money, then you're going to do it for the rest of your life.
Well, it's even Johnny Falco points it out later in the documentary. He's like, why do comedians keep doing comedy? You know, Don Rickles is still doing it. But I mean, I don't know. Comedy is one of those things that you can do forever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And but his, by the way, how old were his? Well, who did he say?
Henny Youngman. Take My Wife.
And Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah. Who is dead now. But, yeah. You know, I'm sure at the time was alive.
But yeah, it's definitely one of those things where we are lucky that we get to do our passion for the rest of our lives as long as we have a capable mind. And a lot of these guys aren't, and you watched it, and you know none of them made it, like now, because it's been...
It's been a couple of years since this thing's been out, so it's like...
Yeah, it's been a few. And you just watch, and you're like heartbroken, because you're like, oh, you ain't gonna make it.
Yeah.
Like the one dude who's doing the tanning and the, but he's just so short.
Small. That's the guy we introduced first, I think. His name is Nicky Oceans. He's a 24-year-old. He's been wrestling for 10 years already. He would get taken out of school early by his dad, and now is working a personal trainer job and wrestling. You know, like a lot of guys, they work a job.
And he's not going to make, like, you know he doesn't. But even if you're watching it at the time the year it was made, you're like, oh, he doesn't have a chance.
Well, and that's why it's also called the bottom rope, because, you know, for guys like Nicky Oceans, he's at the bottom. This is where you start, you know, the bottom rung. But then you also have the guys that trickled back down.
Yeah, exactly, who are stepping on that bottom rung.
Yeah.
Trying to get themselves back up.
Even Johnny Falco points out, he's like, yeah, I'm using those guys because they've come down this far and they need a job, but I'm also using their notoriety to fill people. And that's where we're introduced to Marty Jannetty.
Oh, shit. Marty Jannetty. This is what made this documentary memorable. Now, if you are not familiar with the history of one Martin Jannetty. Let me fill you in. He started off in the WWE as one half of one of the most popular tag teams that I remember as a kid, the Rockers. And him and Shawn Michaels, they were the two young, good-looking guys who had a very they were honestly, you know what they were? They were the American Lucha Dragons. They were just, you know, two kind of younger guys who had a fast-paced style and were very fun to watch. And they did a lot of, like, the double team thing where they'd each do, like a super kick. Mm-hmm. They were, like, they were kind of like the originators of that, too. So they were almost like white Usos. And their finishing move was each would be on a turnbuckle and they would do this flying punch maneuver. It just looked really cool. And they wore these really neon, colorful tights.
To match the music that you just played.
Yes, exactly. With the they wore like the cut up shirts and they had like the tassels everywhere. Just very 80s, big hair. And then and they cover this in the documentary, kind of, because they didn't obviously have any money to spend for rights.
Yeah.
But they talk about the infamous barbershop incident. No, I'm not talking about Barbershop 2 Back in Business.
What about Barbershop 3 something?
At least it's not Tyler Perry.
Barbershop 4, Barbershop Harder.
Barbershop 5, Little Shop of Horrors. What? So Marty Jannetty and Shawn Michaels had an infamous split in which they'd had some in-ring altercations with Marty Jannetty admitted in this movie was real. They actually had a real fight in the ring that then they kind of played up on camera, and then they came to, you know, Marty and said, we believe Shawn is a superstar and a future face of the company. And you, not so much.
And that really affected him badly.
Yeah, because, well, I mean, he went from and this is kind of a funny thing in life. He went from partying and living like a rock star because he was Marty Jannetty, one half of the Rockers, to just doing drugs and partying and sad because he's Marty Jannetty. One half of the Rockers, you know, like he was living the same lifestyle, but when the success went away and you still live that lifestyle, it becomes sad. And that's what happened to him.
He even said that after a shoulder injury, he went from partying to escape pain of, you know, physical and emotional pain.
Yeah. Cause well, I mean, it had to be grueling. I mean, Shawn Michaels put him through that window. And that became the defining moment of one of their careers.
Mm-hmm.
That's not even going to make a top 20 Shawn Michaels highlight reel of moments in his career.
And that's his number one.
And that's Marty's. Yeah, that's Marty's number one. And he definitely, I don't think, ever really forgave Shawn. Probably still hasn't, no matter what.
Yeah, but that's part of that's not Sean's fault. Like,
no, it's not at all.
If somebody was getting a push, why wouldn't you be like, yeah, I'm going to take it?
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, it's not like – it's not a business like comedy. You know, you couldn't – Sean couldn't bring Marty around to open for him.
Yeah.
You know, they gave him – they tried. He won the Intercontinental title. Yeah. They even did the big thing with Sean where – Marty comes out of the crowd with the hood on and then reveals it and gets the crazy ovation. But yeah, like he was, you know, we still know Shawn Michaels.
Was that ovation when he got re-signed at 45?
I don't even remember. I mean, I remember it, but no, not the same because it had gotten to a point where a lot of your audience at that point didn't know who he was just because they didn't. Again, the Rockers weren't Hall of Fame tag team, you know, they were never champions.
Yeah,
they're just really entertaining, you know. If they do go into the Hall of Fame, I think that's Shawn Michaels using Triple H to help his friend out.
Mm-hmm.
But Marty Jannetty is sad in this movie. It is really sad.
Yeah, and even like, well, I just mentioned he gets re-signed at 45, so he's back in the WWE after like 10 years. And then he goes and messes that up because he parties too much and he got – quote, legal trouble and was arrested.
Yeah, and that's even at the, but even from the beginning, before he even got that hope, just Oh man, just seeing him walking into that whatever community center.
Well, he said he went from Madison Square Garden, and now that one show was in a church.
Yeah. Oh, that was a church?
Yeah, something like that. You know, one of those VFW.
But just watching him walk in there with the other, like, well, because, I mean, we've seen, again, it's so weird how similar the business is. We've seen those old celebrities, and you also, it's also interesting to always see the local guys mm-hmm. react around them.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, I'll admit, there's been guys I've been that way with. Because they were just a big part of my childhood or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, they may not have been heroes, but they still probably weren't people I should have met.
Yeah, well, you don't want to meet your heroes and find out that he's washed up and just holding on to 1980.
Yeah, oh, really holding on to 1980 through the whole, just the way he's, even when they're interviewing him, like, it's like he doesn't realize. Because I'm sure in his mind, when he was talking to people at whatever local dive bar he hangs out in, he was telling them about this documentary he was getting ready to do that might be the thing that catapults him back into the spotlight. And you're like, but Marty, it's called The Bottom Rope. it's about the worst.
It's like how we talk about our podcast. We're like,
yeah,
no,
exactly.
Something's going to happen from it.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got 75 downloads this week.
Which is a very low number for us.
Yeah, yeah, of course. All of ours are streaming. That's where the thousands
and millions
of rassholes.
Rassholes, I forgot. That's a.
I know, we should have totally said that on the Jake one, but.
Yeah.
All right, so we forgot to welcome you in, rassholes.
Yeah.
But Marty was just so sad, and when they're interviewing him, it's just. He's still got that 80s vibe to him.
Mm-hmm.
While they're doing the promo, because they do show him doing that one promo, which is like, again, it was embarrassing because he's like, hey, whatever, you know, North Dakota Civic Center,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm going to be rocking and rolling. And like he's doing all his old cliche 80s stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, that's if you're coming to see Marty Jannetty, that's what you want to see, you know?
Absolutely. But he still talks that way when he's talking to the documentary crew.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
what I'm saying. Like, he doesn't switch out of that to be a normal human being.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, they show him at the – cause and I'm sure he does do a lot of these because I'm pretty sure you can just get fucked up and be at those – the conventions.
Yeah, and just go sign or – and they said the narrator was like, you know, you can make money from either like doing a signing or doing a wrestling school or a class of, you know, how to wrestle or being in the business. And I'm sure it's like a lot of when comics do that, they do a comedy class or something like that. It's extra money, man.
And you know what made me sad about the way they described that?
What?
Was he was like, well, Marty can, you know, make up to hundreds of dollars. It's like, oh, no.
I'd he's kill for hundreds of dollars. Yeah.
Yeah, he's...
And there was that part where he's talking and he's like, you know, when I was 40, all my friends were like, man, you get out of it. You can still go to school and learn a trade. And he's like, but then I was 45 and I got re-signed by WWE. And then for a little bit, because I didn't know the story of it, because that was before I even started watching wrestling. And it's like, oh, there's a glimmer of hope. And he's like, and then I messed it up with drugs and stuff like that.
But the best part was he was like, he threw it in their face.
Yeah.
He's like, here I am, 45, getting the call. What you got to say now?
Yeah.
A week later, he's – and did you notice, like, even when he was doing his match, like, it was just bad when, like, the one guy is doing the promo, and he's like, I just want you to fight. I want to fight with you, man to man. And you could just see how bad Marty is because he's like, well, I mean, of course it's going to be man to man unless you're a woman. It's just that's so bad.
Do you think when he's wrestling, just like the local wrestlers, that he's like, I'm going to kill you, Sean? Like he just starts calling him Sean?
Marty, stop punching him. He's already dead.
good Simpsons callback.
Thank you. Hamburglar.
And then there was that part, and it's that the 24-year-old Nikki Oceans. Was like, he's looking at Marty and he's like, then Marty cuts to like, I got this extra brace. It's like, do I put it on the left ankle or the right ankle? Which hurts tonight more? And then he looks at him and he's like, ah, that guy's got no Like, we got no fallback career. I'm like, but you're 24. You got plenty of time.
Yeah.
But, you know, Marty's, what, at 45 or 50 in this documentary.
Yeah, this was some years ago. And
even the 24-year-old's like, this is what we do, you know. Even if I'm working a job, this is still what I'm going to do. And he's taking big bumps already at 24. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, when he gets thrown off that ladder
through
the table. That's just yikes. And that's a wonder. You're making $30 for that.
You hear people talk about, you know, save your bumps, and then you look at people like Daniel Bryan, who had 8 concussions or whatever it was before he even was in the WWE. Mm-hmm. It's like you have to conserve your body because that's your instrument.
Let me ask you this. You personally, would you feel insulted if a booker contacted you to MC a gig for $50 that was an hour away from your house?
I wouldn't, but it just
depends. Would you do it?
If I had that night open, and if it's Thursday night, he calls me on Thursday, and it's Friday night.
What if it's Saturday? And it's 6 months away.
No.
No. Okay, that's you driving an hour to talk for 15 minutes and collect $50.
There are a lot of guys that would kill for that.
A lot of these guys are driving 3 hours for $25, mm-hmm. and they're putting their bodies at risk.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane to me. That's why I have so much respect for those independent guys.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I like going to their shows. Like, NXT guys are still making decent money.
Yeah.
You know, these guys, holy shit, like, the stuff they were showing them do, and like what we saw in Card Subject to Change, like the stuff that these guys go through for the little bit of money, and
it was that death match with the barbed wire.
Yeah, yeah, and the pit of fire and everything else. And
if you haven't gotten a chance, go back and listen to Card Subject to Change. That's an episode that's still available on our feed, but that really delves deep, and it's kind of the same lines of this documentary, but a little bit longer.
And honestly, a little even more higher up.
Yeah.
This one, which was, I mean, did you see when Marty Jannetty got on that top rope? His head was about to go into the ceiling. That's like how small the venue he was wearing. This is the guy who used to fly across the ring
mm-hmm.
as like a signature of his character. And instead he's being resorted to having to be knocked off before he hits his head and gives himself a concussion.
Do you think just when he was about to jump off, and I think that at that point they were chanting, you know, Marty, Marty. I thought it'd be funny if somebody like dubbed in like NXT, NXT. Just like wrong reactions for that.
Well, and what's sad is he could have had something better, because again, if you haven't followed Marty Jannetty, he's unfortunately, I tried to find it today, he's deleted his Twitter account, it looks mm-hmm. like. But I mean, there was times he was calling out Stephanie McMahon for like things on Raw. He would always just make fun of Raw and talk about how bad it was. And then also every year around the time the Hall of Fame would come around, he would talk about how he needs to go into the Hall of Fame. The Rockers need to go into the Hall of Fame. That's how he always do it too, by the way. The Rockers need to go into the Hall of Fame. Like, yeah, how can the Rockers not be in the Hall of Fame? And in fact, going as far as to making his Twitter handle at RealJannetty, HOF.
Yeah,
yeah.
Does he have a website up right now?
I don't know. Let me check.
Because it's like Virgil. It's like we could probably give him $50. But I'm not trying to shit on the guy. But there's a link for WWE.com. There's no.
No.
How are we supposed to contact this guy for booking?
There's a. There's a Facebook fan page, it looks like. I'm trying to see if I can open that. Let's see. Yeah, I don't know. This is the official fan page of The Rocker, Marty Jannetty. He has a new logo. It's the old school upside down WWE, but now goes into a J for MJ.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Ugh. Last post was from January 4th of this year. That was just the logo. And then a post a month bef- before that of What the World is Watching, you heard another just the logo. But October 22nd, he did a show for Superstars of Wrestling on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Rome, Georgia, at the USA Valley Fairgrounds. Teddy Long was there. Paul Orndorff, Tommy Dreamer, not a bad lineup. Scott Hall, DDP, Ron Simmons. Not a bad lineup.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, that was October 22nd, 2015, and there hasn't been an update since.
And that, like we said, that's the after you're done wrestling, essentially, that's the bread and butter of, you know, I'll sign your picture for $20.
Yeah, and that's why I always get amazed when people go to those conventions and they complain. He's charging 20. Yeah.
Yeah.
How the fuck else do you think he's going to make any money?
And they had a moment where, I don't know if it was in this one or Jake the Snake, but they had guys like signing at a documentary or at the conventions, and there's never a lack of grown men holding those wrestling belts wherever there's wrestling. Like, it just amazes me. Like, fine, if you want to do whatever you want, but like, you're just holding a belt. You got to hold that all night. It's not
Yeah, and besides, the best ever was when Damian Sandow and The Miz were tag team champions, and he had the two toy tag team championship belts that he took around with them. So no other grown man should ever carry another belt around in public.
Yeah.
Unless you've won that belt.
Yeah. Well, and it's also like you got to spend whatever, $300, $400 on that belt, and then another $100 for the extender.
Not to mention, I should be able to challenge you for that belt anytime, any place.
Just bring it on you. Have the briefcase and bring a ref. That
would be great. Just hit him with
the briefcase. I think if you buy the Money in the Bank briefcase, that then you can now challenge anybody to win their belt.
So if you buy the replica Money in the Bank briefcase, you can only challenge for replica belts, and if you buy the authentic, then you can challenge for the authentic belts?
Yeah, that's how it works. We don't want that shit up in the cage with the fake briefcase with the real belt. That's not how this works, Junior.
I swear, at some point in time, I'm going to buy one of those Money in the Bank briefcases, and then I'm going to request to host a show you are on at Crackers, and during your set, I am coming onto the stage with the briefcase. I'm going to bring Jimmy Roberson up with me in a referee shirt. I'm going to hand it to him. He's going to look confused as if he doesn't know what I'm trying to do. And I'm going to explain to him what I want to do. And then Chris Miller is going to come over.
The manager.
The PA. Yeah, the manager of the club is going to come over the PA with Brad Scott is cashing in his headlining set. I'm just going to start going into jokes.
As long as I can still sell my T-shirts after the show and sign my $20 photos, I don't care.
Hang up your Ultimate Warrior jacket, try to get some action on that.
By the way, I have a Jake the Snake action figure on eBay that I've not sold in 6 months, so I'm hurting real bad.
How much is that going for?
I don't even know anymore. It's been a while. $7. You can have it for $7. So are we good? Any final thoughts on this?
What else really happened? Crowbar seems to be happy with his life.
We've talked for over the length of the documentary. So.
Well, and there wasn't any big completion to this one. Like in Card Subject to Change, you saw what kind of happened to some of the people from it and everything. People got opportunities in a lot of the other documentaries. This was legitimately just the bottom rung where nobody went anywhere.
Yeah.
It's the same open micer that hasn't gotten a paycheck in 6 years and is still showing up to the open mic.
Well, it was still the headliner that, has fallen back.
So very, very, very interesting documentary.
Yeah, and it's like we said, it's only 25 minutes, so you could watch this real quick, and it's free. Just type in The Bottom Rope on Google, and I think it's on Vimeo, so you can watch it for free.
Yep. Now, Brent, I was looking over your work on this episode.
Oh, I thought it was pretty good.
You would think that, but
oh, no.
I've been doing some live polling. And the audience has spoken.
Okay, what'd they say?
You're fired. You're fired.